So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This edition comes to you thanks to our sponsor, the Media Masters podcast, which this week features an interview with Times columnist and Tory peer Daniel Finkelstein. To listen to that, just visit mediamasters.fm. Welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. This week we've something a little different for you. To coincide with the radio festival, the British Library gathered a panel of radio experts to discuss the future of the airwaves. We'll hear journalist Ruth Barnes speaking to friends of the Media Podcast, Matt Deegan and Miranda Sawyer, plus Femi Edmund Adeyemi, the founder of Hackney radio station NTS, and Helen Bowden, who at the time of this recording last week was the Beeb's director of radio. That was the pinnacle of a BBC career spanning 34 years, which came to an end on Friday when she announced her resignation. We'll have more on the news of her replacement and all of the gossip from the media industries, as usual, in the next edition of the Media Podcast. For now, though, here's Ruth Barnes.
Welcome to this special Future of Radio podcast. I'm Ruth Barnes, broadcaster and massive radio nerd, and this discussion will be among the very first audio items to be catalogued in a brand new National Radio Archive. The British Library, from next year, will hit record across a number of radio and audio streams to pilot what should become an important and vital research tool for future generations. So, to the future of radio, a massive topic which we're going to get stuck into here with the help of our panel of industry experts. Matt Deegan, the creative director at Folder Media and runs the Next Radio Conference, welcome to the table.
Hello, good to be here.
We have Helen Bowden, the director of BBC Radio.
Hello.
Hello there. We have Femi Adeyemi, the founder of global online radio station NTS. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
And Miranda Sawyer, observer journalist and rabid consumer of all things radio and audio.
Indeed I am.
There is no doubt that this is the most exciting time to be working in radio, as we all do, but also to be listening to radio. There's tons of content out there. There really is something for everyone. Potentially, we're getting into a time where there's maybe too much content. People are overwhelmed with what there is out there to listen to. My first question for all of you really is what is radio to you, I guess, and in your position in the industry? What is radio? And I'm going to start with you, Matt.
Well, I'm going to steal somebody else's line because, I think one of the things radio is good at is combining other people's content. So I'll nick a line from a guy called James Cridland, and he says radio is a shared experience with a human connection. And what he was getting at was we can all consume audio, and that might be a great album or that might be a streaming service. But I think radio is something that you can share or you can talk about. And normally there's a person involved, and that might be a person who's picked all the songs or a person who does an interview or talks to someone. And I think that's what makes it different from it just being an algorithmic playlist. Nothing wrong with an algorithmic playlist. I love an algorithmic playlist, but at the same time, I think radio is something a bit more, and they can, those places are keen to take the radio word, but I think maybe we should push back on that sometimes.
And what about you, Helen?
Well, I hugely agree with what you're saying, clever boy, that Mr. Cridland. I think it's a relationship. And I think that's what makes it different from stream music. You're sometimes in the mood for streamed music, particularly if you choose it yourself. But actually, there's a very deep, enduring human need for connection with other humans. And that's what radio gives you.
Does it matter that most of us have stopped listening to radio on actual physical radio sets? There's a huge audience that don't listen traditionally anymore. And Femi, NTS have tapped into that audience.
Yeah, I mean, we read so many studies of like a lot of young kids not really listening to the sort of traditional sort of FM format. I personally believe the FM format is still going to be here for a long time. It's the format I grew up in, especially in this country with such a rich pirate radio history. But yeah, there is definitely a massive sort of shift to online radio platforms and stuff like that.
I think I'm just going to pick you up, Ruth.
Go on, Helen.
So many people, most of us not listening on radio, so we don't actually know that. I mean, the point is, in huge numbers of households, people have got 4, 5, 6 old-fashioned radios. The interesting thing is that what characterises all of radio listening is the convenience of the platform. And one of the problems for the young, if they want to listen live, is how bloody expensive it is. Yeah. You know, on your mobile, it's really expensive. Bill shock is a problem.
I'm going to just sort of jump in on consumption as well. Because also, you know, we're on a format here. You know, the people who are listening to this, you've chosen to consume it and put it in your ears, which makes you a sort of slightly different self-selecting group. I mean, what we've got to remember is in broadcast radio, 90% of the country listen to some form of radio each week. 83% listen to some form of analog radio, AM and FM. Nearly 50% of the country listen to some form of DAB, some broadcast radio. 16% listen to their radio through the telly, and 21% of the country listen to some form of internet radio. This is live stream radio. And this is through a survey called Radar that measures all radio stations, whether they've paid to be in it or not. But reach is one thing, so that's someone who has just listened to 5 minutes within a week. But the thing that we've all got to look at is time spent listening. How much time do people give to the different devices? And so for the internet, that's just 8% of the time. And even when you look at young audiences, so sort of 15 to 24s, you know, the volume consumed, DAB radio, which is a broadcast platform, does better than internet consumption. And you sort of go, oh, that's a surprise. And it's like, well, it's not really a surprise. It's a device that's in half of people's homes. And it's something that provides a big bulk of hours. So I think it's easy, like all technology, to maybe overestimate the short-term impact and then maybe underestimate the long-term impact of these things. But I think one of radio's successes is it's got the most brilliant user interface. You know, literally, you turn it on and stuff comes out. And we're very lucky to have had that box historically. And I think as we go forward onto internet platforms or mobile, actually that starts to get a bit more complex.
I mean, music is probably, alongside sort of like, I don't know, porn and something, it's probably the most search thing for on the internet. So how do you stand out as a sort of radio platform? You have YouTube, you have Spotify, you have Beats and stuff. How do you compete with those guys? And the competition is harder on the internet, but then what we do have as a benefit under it of being an online streaming platform is the sort of global reach that we have.
Femi, I was going to ask you at this point, can you just give us a kind of a nutshell of what NTS is? Because I listen to it, I love it as an online place to consume new music. How can you contextualise it for us? Tell us what it is.
The approach to NTS was basically, okay, there's sort of the sort of traditional format to radio. But we came during the time when the DJ became sort of the celebrity. You know, no one wanted to be a musician anymore. The DJ was sort of like God. Everyone wanted to be a DJ. There's so many DJs in London. They just wanted a platform to get themselves out there. They couldn't get in a traditional sort of FM or AM format. The process to get on the BBC is what you might not, it's not even worth trying sometimes, or trying to get on RIN to any of the other sort of established radio stations. And you know, the plan behind NTS was just to give these kids or just people just an opportunity to put their stuff out. Our target demographic is, well, our demographic actually is between the ages of, I say, between the age of 20 to sort of 35. That is our core demographic. And, we cater to sort of like music from the 1930s to sort of like trap music to this day. And you know, we're able to be that flexible because we don't really have the restrictions that you'd have with a traditional radio format. You know, we don't, you know, we're not sort of monitored by Ofcom. We do still have to pay the licensing fees, but we don't have the sort of like, you know, we don't have the sort of strict rules and regulations, and which sort of gives us a lot more freedom and a lot, and allows us to be a lot more risky with what we do, which is kind of what has kind of led to our success, I think.
Helen, there's lots of nodding coming from you here. And as someone who oversees all of BBC Radio, which is, it's an incredible time for BBC Radio at the moment, I guess, because you're doing some extraordinary things at the youth end that you wouldn't probably do at the other end, which I guess is Radio 4, or am
well,
I wrong?
Well, you're wrong a bit because, wait, I mean, Radio, no, none of our Radio 1 Extra listeners would ever think we were just an audio service. I mean, they may listen to a lot of audio, but they expect film, they expect the live lounge to be streamed, they expect stills, they expect social media. But actually, and that's been going on in Radio 1 for 5, 6, 7 years, depending on how much money we've got, frankly, for that kind of extra. But increasingly, other audiences want selective kind of added extra. So if you're a Radio 2 audience, you want Red Button, you want very classy filming of that Elton John concert. You don't want the slightly less finished product that a lot of other younger people really don't mind. Radio 3, even that audience, and I say even because it tends to be quite conservative in some aspects, but some of the things they do, they really want filmed. And Radio 4 has done a lot of very, very clever online cartoons, pre-programs. A lot of this is slightly testing out what's worth pursuing and what isn't, because for most of our audiences, and I do think 1&1 Extra is slightly different, it's the radio relationship that really matters. The rest is different. In terms of what you were saying about Ofcom and how you can be that much riskier, I mean, 1&1 Extra does okay, but we do have very clear rules and we get pulled up with them all the time. And that is one of the benefits of your kind of operation and must be attractive to lots of listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, it's that, like I said, it's that freedom that we have that, not necessarily from what can be said, just, you know, the sort of music that can be played. You know, it's, you know, we don't do playlists at all. You know, it's literally just someone coming on who's passionate about whatever music they're into, whatever it is they, you know, want to talk about, and they just have the freedom to, you know, say whatever.
I'd really like to sort of, because I started in commercial radio, kind of also big up commercial radio in this country at the moment, because at the moment the radars are showing that in terms of share, you know, the kind of proportions of people listening, we're about 50-50 commercial and the BBC after many years of the BBC being in the ascendant. And that is because I think commercial radio have really got their act together on their branding. They've launched a lot of new services on the new DAB muxes, as they're called, and they're doing them incredibly well. So both Bauer, which is one of the big commercial radio companies, and Global, are their audiences are strengthening almost on a daily basis.
And I think a lot of that's down to distribution. And historically, there's been quite a big barrier to entry to get on the radio. So it's interesting you're talking to Femi about creating an internet station that can find an audience doing something different. Or, you know, pre-1995, you know, if you didn't have an FM license, and there weren't many of them, you couldn't have a radio station, you couldn't do anything for commercial radio other than one FM network and two AM networks, so Classic FM on FM and Talk Radio and Talk Sport and then Virgin Radio. You just couldn't get on the dial. And what digital and broadcast digital radio, be that through the telly or through a DAB radio, it's meant that a lot more people can launch more stations. And so the big groups who are always encumbered from doing that can take a popular station like KISS, which has only ever historically been in London, and can take that to audiences in Cumbria and Scotland and South Wales as well. And I think when we look at other radio stations in other markets in other countries, what we see is that radio in the UK is held up very, very strongly because actually there's more choice for listeners.
Femi, I wanted to pick up on something that you said about the way you program things on NTS. You still have live shows, so it's not just all about people listening again to mixes.
You
still engage with live radio. Still has a place.
It still has a place. I mean, we try to use technology as much as possible when we have live chat rooms. On top of that, we also do video. We stream some of our shows. I feel passionate about the sort of the radio should be radio in the sense that people shouldn't have to necessarily see radio. For me, what radio is really about is being able to use my imagination and listen to what was being said.
We're talking about the way radio is changing and the way people are consuming radio is changing, the way audiences are changing. Miranda, who is a massive podcast consumer, I feel like this is where you need to come in and just and really talk to us about podcasting, because podcasts have changed the audio landscape. They've been going for a long time. There have been podcasts have been around for ages, but really in the last couple of years, there's been an explosion, and it's starting to have an impact on the way we consume and the way we listen.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, podcasts, because I think actually there's a kind of type of person that likes podcasts, and they actually remind me, the younger person, of people who used to like indie bands and indie brands. So you might have fans of American podcasts and a particular style of podcast, and they will go to live versions of those podcasts, whether that's The Moth, although that's slightly older, or kind of a drama-style podcast or a comedy podcast, and they will dress up in a certain way, they will bring knitted toys. They really remind me of indie bands. And there's something about that that I find quite interesting, because I think that amongst older people, and I count myself as an older person, that podcasts have slightly replaced listening to music. So that if you have on your phone, it's a lot to do with accessibility. So, you know, a lot of people have got iPhones or you know, the equivalent. And there's a place where you can just hit and you get a podcast. And because, weirdly, if you have an iPhone, the music section is really hard. It just doesn't work very well. And the podcast section works really well. So if you're kind of driving, or you want to go for a run, or you're on the tube, actually older people who get irritated with the way that iTunes works, or Spotify even, may well just go to podcasts. And I find that those kind of podcasts are slightly different from the ones I was talking about, indie bands, which tend to be comedy or drama or something slightly offbeat. Those podcasts are consumed actually by people who might have been a Radio 4 listener, but actually equally might be a Radio 6 music listener. That's that kind of person.
Don't forget, the 6 music listener is almost always a Radio 4 listener because it's a subset of Radio 4, yeah. Just like the Radio 3 consumer is. So there's that yearning, that curiosity amongst about 10 to 12 million people probably for a lot of interesting audio experiences. I love your analogy with the indie band. I think that's absolutely right. But I certainly know my own, and I'm certainly the oldest person around this table, my own consumption. The podcasts, I go through phases of being completely obsessed with them, and then suddenly they all sound the same, particularly the American ones. That sort of intimate tone and that sort of offbeat humour, which suddenly grates, and you go back to Melvin Bragg with relief. You know, it's that kind of thing. But it's great, because actually I'm probably listening to as much, if not more, as I've ever done.
I think one of the big changes for podcasts has been consumption of speech radio by people who traditionally wouldn't have listened to it, or have just done it a little bit earlier. So I think absolutely getting older, people have always started to consume more speech. So I think that's probably gone earlier another 10 years, yeah, and broadened out maybe to people who have never really been exposed to Radio 4, and can suddenly find something that touches them and talks to them.
And that kind of intimacy you get with podcasts, because obviously with radio generally, I mean, you know, I realise it's a bit of a cliche, but the idea is that you walk into the kitchen, you press a button, you listen to the radio. And that's not the same with podcasts. You kind of choose to listen. And so because of that, you tend to listen to, not always, but with headphones on, there's a different style to it. And there's an intimacy. And also there's a big backlog, you know, with some of the most popular podcasts. So you know, you feel like you know the person who's presenting it, or where they've been going, or you feel very close to the presenters. And I know that you can do with radio, but sometimes some types of radio, news radio, I think more than anything, you feel like you're broadcast at rather than invited in. And it's a slightly different way of listening.
It's back to that thing of it's a relationship, and podcasts, yeah, do give it to you. The thing about them banking up, though, you end up feeling slightly panicked. It's like a tsunami of podcasts.
That's just occasionally generally.
I just, you know, delete. And I bet others do that too.
Do you think, Helen, that in the future we might see a BBC commissioner of podcasts?
Completely possible. Although in general we're going to fewer people, not more people, but probably different roles. And you know, it's interesting how over time we've become more confident about this. Five Live is particularly good at this, the little extras that actually make the podcast feel different. I mean, the bit of to talk about Melvin, you know, where they chat at the end of the program, which we know our consumers absolutely love. They love that sense of the intimate listening in, and there's lots of small things you can do like that.
Okay, wonderful. Femi, I wanted to ask you about audiences, about who specifically is listening to NTS and how are they listening? And Matt, I'll bring you in here as well, because I know that you've written quite a lot about people listening on mobile and how radio, there's a bit of a mixed relationship there. It's not quite working. But Femi, let's start with you.
I mean, like I said earlier, our demographic's quite young, so between the ages of 20 to sort of 35 to 40, you know.
That's quite a big chunk of people.
That's because we cover such a wide range of stuff. You know, like I'm 35 myself, so I like...
You look about 12.
Thanks. But like, I've been, when the radio station first started, a lot of the people who started were around the same age as me. You know, we've all sort of grown up together and played the same sort of music. So most of the listeners listen on their phones. And so, you know, everything we do is designed, everything we do for the website is designed to work well on phones, so it's as convenient as possible. We haven't got an app yet, but it's something we're working on, just to make it as convenient as possible for the listeners to use. But yeah, no, it's that sort of young demographic. They're on Instagram, they're on Snapchat. We use all the socials, Facebook. They actually don't use Facebook as much anymore because their parents are all on Facebook, so they just want to stay away from that. Most of our staff, and there's 14 full-time people working at NTS. You know, Sean, who's my business partner, and I are the oldest people in there. Everyone else is between the age of like 20 and 26. So, you know, they just, you know, they know what's happening and they sort of help to sort of direct the station in the right.
I think that kind of brings us neatly onto new platforms in a way, because I think that one thing that an NTS does brilliantly is teams up with brands. It's becoming less of an evil word these days because brands are actually enabling lots of fantastic content.
I mean,
and you guys team up really well, really intelligently with brands.
Well, this is like, you know, we have this conversation quite a lot because I'm from a generation where brands, where I think I'm on the cusp of generation X or Y. I've been reading all these things, so, but like I'm from a generation where brands were still sort of, working with brands was still frowned on, you know. But with kids these days, with the new generation of kids coming up, if you're not working for brand, you're not successful. You know, they see working, they talk about themselves as a brand. You know, so it's how you play that, where you're not completely, you know, plastered by one brand. You know, the relationships we have, it's normally very subtle. We don't do paid for advertising on the radio station, so it's the one way we sort of make, it's sort of, it's one form of revenue for us, is to work on an event with a brand or do sort of a certain kind of broadcast of a brand.
One thing that we can't really ignore is the fact that there is a lot of content out there. I mean, NTS has a very committed audience. I mean, people love their BBC shows, people love their podcasts that they're very passionate about. But discoverability is one of these words that we first need to explain, Matt, I think, first of all. And second of all, maybe look at the ways that the BBC is starting to give people the content that they want when they log in to iPlayer and these kind of things, and delivering that content and engaging the audiences and getting bigger audiences then for the content as a result.
So the great thing is new platforms allow infinite content at infinite quality, some amazing, some less amazing, but trying to find that and trying to be connected to the things that you care about becomes much harder. And in a broadcast world where everyone consumed BBC One or Radio 2 or in London, Capital FM, whatever it might be, it was very easy to tell people where things were and what they could consume. That gets more difficult now. And I think even for existing broadcasters, I think we often forget that we were just lucky about the platforms that we were on, rather than our content being super amazing and that being the reason why people tuned in. And what you see often in some research looking at radio stations around the world, mobile streaming of those stations is a bit flat. So you'd expect it to be in sort of accelerated growth because everyone's now got one and you've got your 3G and your 4G and you know, the Wi-Fi and all the stuff. But you know what? Actually, a mobile device is a very entertaining device that can get you a lot of other things, whether that's YouTube or games or, you know, the world is in that place. And, you know, a lot of radio stations have worked excellently as background. And when you see that actually for podcasts, which are a little bit more foreground, you know, people have chosen to consume it, as Miranda was saying. And even with sort of interactive radio services. So in America, there's a service called Pandora, which is a radio, like a radio station, and you thumb up and down the songs and it gets better at creating something for you. And that's a bit more interactive than listening to a stream of a station that you're used to. It does a different job. You engage in a different way. So for existing broadcasters, I think they have to probably think slightly differently, and not just creating one product they hope everyone gets, but trying to find something that's a bit more focused at an individual.
I think also the BBC, you know, having maybe slightly panicked about podcasts, have got better. So what you find, you know, what the BBC, particularly, you know, Radio 4 and the World Service, they're really good at documentaries, and that can be like a series or just a one-off. And, you know, I used to find it incredibly frustrating because it would be something that was really brilliant and then it would disappear in 14 days, 7 days, 28 days. And what they've become better at is finding, you know, just literally doing a web page when everything is on. So they've got the Seriously strand, and so that's where you can find interesting documentaries. Or they've now gathered all the music documentaries together, which I'm incredibly excited about because there's loads that you miss without even meaning to. And I just think actually quite often it's literally that. It's putting everything together and offering it out to people. And that's not just the BBC. It's if you are part of a kind of podcast group, like if you're part of Radiotopia or other groups that have sprung up that are just saying, you know what, podcasting is quite lonely and there's only you and you're putting it out there, maybe if we all join together, then some fans of this show will also like your show. And that's a way of doing it, because otherwise it can seem it's a big world out there and everyone's making podcasts post Serial. So like you have to negotiate through, don't you? I mean, I find actually as a radio reviewer that, you know, you can't help it. You have a certain taste and I want to broaden my taste. So quite often I will use social media just to say, what are you listening to? What is good? What have I missed? Because you can miss things so easily. And if I just go on Twitter and say, I'm bored of my taste, what shall I listen to? People will help. And that, I find that really useful, actually.
Well, Helen, I mean, watch, like and share, right?
That's, oh, yes.
That's what it's all about.
But this is a massive challenge for a broadcaster like the BBC, both in telly and radio, that we do so much. When I was controller of Radio 4, I used to get loads of letters from people saying, you never tell us how many wonderful things and where to find them. And then they'd get the same people saying, and you do all those terrible trails, which was our effort to try and tell them. But actually, technology will rescue us on this, because we're doing a big project, which I'm the executive sponsor of, called My BBC, which is basically a series of digital tools. So if you love our sports app, it allows you to get to an incredible granular level of detail on the things you love. And equally, it will allow you to do that in terms of radio programmes or telly programmes. But to your point about getting bored with your own taste, I'm very averse to the idea that you simply go on offering people things that they already have kind of liked. It's really bad. It's really un-Reithian, I have to say. So one of the things about our personalization is it will work quite hard to offer you things that aren't necessarily your natural taste, because serendipity is an incredibly important part of the way the human being engages with the world. You know, we all love it when it works. When it doesn't work, we just think that was a bad idea.
And also, you don't want to end up with that thing that's a big problem on Facebook or any all social media. Everyone, you're just listening to yourself all the time.
Absolutely.
And then everybody's surprised when, you know, I don't know, a different person gets in an election, or you can't understand why these things happen, because nobody's talking to each other.
There's something interesting that Capital Extra have been doing on their mobile app. So obviously one of the problems for live radio is that you can't skip things you don't like. You're sort of at the mercy of the station. But they've actually introduced a sort of equivalent of a skip button on their app. And if you don't like a song, you can get another song. And what it's meant is they've changed how they make the radio station, because the presenters have started tagging songs with bespoke links, and also being allowed to do more speech content, because they get sometimes told off in commercial radio for talking too much. Whereas this is something that a user is shown, and then they can choose to listen to or skip. And also that information goes back to the station so that they can improve. And in the States, NPR, which is sort of very vaguely equivalent to some of the kind of content that the BBC makes for radio over there, they have a great app called NPR One. And again, what that does is it learns from how consumers use it. And the best thing, I was talking to someone there, said, was that it's improved the cues, the words that you use to introduce a feature. Because if people are skipping halfway through the queue, it means, well, it wasn't a very good introduction of that piece, and that's gone back into making their radio stations better.
More from the panel in just a moment, but first let's hear a clip from this week's Media Masters with Paul Blanchard. And this week, Paul is speaking to the political journalist Daniel Finkelstein.
The Daily Mail had a little pop at the fact that I'd done this work with David Cameron on his tapes.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of these. It was my idea to do them. You know, probably when everything else that I've done in journalism has gone, we'll still have historically, hopefully for decades, maybe even centuries, this political record of a prime minister has never been done before. And so I thought that was a very valuable thing. But the Daily Mail's criticism was that I went on Newsnight and pretended to know no more than anyone else about what the prime minister was thinking. Well, I hope I wasn't doing that, because I wonder why Newsnight would have me on if I did that. I hope that I was pretending to know, you know, a lot about what the prime minister was thinking. And I think their point was to actually be critical of that. They thought that I should actually know less than I did. This seems like a very odd criticism.
You can hear all of that interview by going to mediamasters.fm.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Miranda, all the tech companies seem to be getting into the radio game, Apple, Google and Amazon. I guess you can see this in one of two ways. You can see it as a, you know, it's kind of sinister because we're all signed up. They have all our information. They're going to just be feeding us what they think we want. Or is this a really exciting opportunity for original content makers?
If you look at something like Beats One, I mean, you would, I don't know what I expected from Beats One, but it wasn't actually Beats One. And it's good. But it's not what I thought. So I thought that Apple obviously is quite, it has, you know, it's aspirational, it's kind of closed. You can never, you know, alter anything on your Apple and your Apple Mac or anything like that. But it's essentially specialist content. And, you know, they use the words curate, or they use the words, you know, influencers, all those kind of terrible words. But essentially, there are some really good radio shows there, which I wasn't really expecting. However, having said that, I don't think it's actually immensely successful. You know, it's, nobody really listens. I quite like it. There's a couple of shows that I follow, but it isn't as strong as you thought it might be with Apple. And I think that that's because, you know, it happens to all massive companies. They think they can do everything. And we've seen it time and time again over in history. And that's fine. I don't mind, you know, have a go. But actually, you probably won't be as good as you think. And something, this is the thing I really like about human beings in general, something else will come out that you never thought. So you think that you're going to make this amazing radio station. It'll be like, you know, it's going to take over the world. And actually, you find that the just a few documentaries about crime work really well. So you go along that way. And those things are the things that I love about humans, because you can offer all the content you want. If nobody likes it, it has to go away.
Yeah. I mean, it was just in reference to the Apple thing. I mean, when Beats One first came out, you know, I was a bit like you. I was like, okay, this is Apple. This is going to be pretty bad, but yeah. But I mean, all their products are good. But I just know what them trying to do, what they wanted to do with Beats. I couldn't see how it was going to work. But then I listened to it a few times, and I was like, actually, this is actually pretty good. In a way, from what we do, it kind of legitimizes what we did in the sense that this is the biggest company in the world. It's just basically set up an online radio station at the same time. And we've been doing this for 5 years. You know, they've just taken basically what Apple are trying to do is just go in heavy into the music side of things. I was speaking to someone the other day who is from LA, knows that world a lot better than I, and he's like, their next step potentially is to get into cars. And how are they going to get into cars? They get a car to just, you know, the car manufacturer to build their cars, and they just deal with the sort of electronic side of it, the tech side of the sort of audio side of things in the car, you know. So it's a sort of like they're going to keep trying so many different avenues until they get it right.
It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because the audience that they get, I imagine they would regard them as, I don't know what the kind of categories are, but it's quite high end. You know, those are people that you, if you want to hit them with adverts, you know, that's really great. And I think sometimes with podcasts, I find it quite interesting because essentially, if you get the right podcast, you are hitting all the places that be the BBC Radio 4 hit, but there's no adverts on the BBC. And there's all these brands that are desperate to get at these people. And the podcasts will always offer that. You know, I know about Squarespace. I never knew about Squarespace. Squarespace dominates my life now because I've heard about it so many times on podcasts, you know. And those places which are essentially you can't get at in Britain because it's dominated by the BBC, no adverts, you can get through you know, something like Apple or Spotify or, you know, all those.
Or the fact that Audible are going to be commissioning content, SoundCloud are going to be.
Interestingly, you see, one of the key strengths of the BBC from all our audience research is our lack of adverts, and particularly that Radio 4 audience who don't like them. And if you hear the quality of most radio adverts, it's not surprising. It's not just that the reason they don't like it. But, you know, I started in commercial local radio. I've got huge fondness for it. But the adverts don't seem to have changed much since then. And that was a long while ago.
Yeah, that's kind of why we can take that risk because we're on the internet. We don't have the same costs the commercial radio station have. But from the first minute we started, we were like, no radio advertiser. But you know, like that's where the whole brand thing comes into place. There's new ways of doing things. You know, you don't have to do the traditional format way. And when we speak to a lot of people, they're like, but how do you make any money? You don't do any on air ads. And I'm like, well, there's more subtle ways you can work with a brand without them sort of screaming at you like every 15 minutes.
Well, that's it. And you know that arguably there are brands who've done more for electronic music and dance music over the last couple of years than other more traditional platforms. I mean, if you look at brands like Red Bull, even Smirnoff have got in on the game and actually are creating really great original content around these supposedly niche scenes. They're not really though, are they? I mean, they've got huge audiences, which is why they're tapping into them.
Yeah, they're tapping into it because, you know, they see it as an opportunity. Like the Red Bull Music Academy is an incredible thing. It's like you can be cynical, but some people can be cynical about it and be like, yeah, they're still selling cans of Red Bull, but they are actually giving artists an opportunity to get their work out. And there's a legacy thing with them. They just don't put them out, they actually follow them through the whole process, you know. And that's, you know, I think a lot of brands have sort of seen that and be like, okay, people respond better to that, you know. People don't really frown on Red. I mean,
how could you frown on Red Bull? I mean, I'll be funny about it. You can't. Music Academy is an amazing thing.
And
so many
thing,
people have been through it and it's made such a difference to a lot of people.
And I think there's a difference between kind of integrations and where content is part of your DNA versus running campaigns. And I think if you look at something like Red Bull, this is a long-term project.
Exactly right.
It is not a three-month, we're going to align ourselves with X and Y. It's interesting seeing McDonald's ran an entertainment YouTube channel, I think called Us, which they've just closed. And unsurprisingly, and it's because, you know, creating content is not in their DNA. They are excellent purveyors of fast food, but trying to inhabit that world is very difficult.
Who are the next great content providers then?
Well, we don't know, but that's the interesting bit. I think in most of the metrics, people would probably say that Beats One has been unsuccessful. You know, the from the data that we see, it has not generated a listenership that would compare to any traditional radio service in any of the markets they operate. However, that's not to say it hasn't done a good job for Apple of selling Apple Music subscriptions or to allow for PR each time they do something special. And when they do something special on the Apple Music side, be it things with Drake or Frank Ocean, they do it really well and interestingly and different. And that's content. Yeah, that is all content. You don't need to be a linear stream radio station. I think where they've perhaps gone slightly wrong is they've made some assumptions about what radio is, whereas people who have maybe made radio stations for a number of years perhaps understand listener behaviour a bit more. But that's not to say they won't be successful at content in a different way.
Femi, you've already mentioned the C word, which is cars.
Yeah.
And I want to ask Helen, actually, how important the kitchen and car is still to the BBC, to the BBC radio
Not
audience?
Just the BBC, the radio industry as a whole.
Okay.
29 million cars don't have DAB radio. To your point about FM, it really matters. Lots of new cars are coming in with DAB radio. It's about 30% of our listening, I think, 25 to 30%. of our listening. That's the radio industry. So it's massively important. The thing that really interests me is the driverless car, which is coming down the road. Sorry about the pun. But it is coming probably faster than we think. And at that point, I think it's a massive challenge for radio, because if you can watch rather than listen...
If we're all people, with our feet up in the back of the car,
people like me
movie.
Will continue to listen, because I love the audio experience and always have done over a video experience. But an awful lot of, particularly the young... will just not see the point. And that has been a really important part of how people have consumed. It's a challenge for the BBC. For commercial radio, it's a massive challenge.
And I was going to say, how do you future-proof that? Exactly.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, again, the right content in the right places on the right platforms. We run a children's radio station called Fun Kids, and it's very easy to go, oh, the kids don't listen to the radio. And it's like, well, 250,000 of them listen to us, so they do. And they do, and anyone does, if you provide content for them. And that can be for different demographic groups. We happen to concentrate on kids. Now, our audience has an expectation that if they hear an interview on air or they see a silly thing that a presenter does, there is an assumption it will be on the app or on YouTube. And it's our job, it's the content team's job, to make sure that whatever we have it in as many places as possible. I think radio's been lucky to own the car for 70 years. We didn't earn that, you know, we were just lucky. And hey, guess what? The world changes and new things are going to be in those places.
It's also interesting, I think, sometimes about radio, because in a car, because naturally nowadays, I think if you don't like what's on the telly, what do you do? You know, your kids are watching something or they're playing FIFA or whatever, you do something else. And there's something about the democracy of making people listen to stuff in the car that I quite like as a nasty parent. But also, my kids make me listen to stuff. So they're obsessed with Kiss, which is not my natural habitat, just because they play the same songs over and over. But I don't mind it. And actually, I'm very happy with Kistory because, you know, we're an old raver. So as soon as we have that kind of Kistory out, I'm really happy. And so there are ways of, you know, within the car, I find the old-fashioned ways quite interesting because it's still... imposes on kids. You know what you find in the end is they put on their own headphones and ignore you, but I really like making them listen to stuff.
Well, I think in car but also in office, you know, the station that we can all agree on.
That's quite hard, isn't it?
It isn't. And I think headphones and more online services has probably detracted from that a bit. But when we get feedback from parents, some of the emails are like, I hate Fun Kids, but at least it's not listening to that same playlist or that same CD. We are the least worst option for them. I'm more than happy to accept
that's
fine. That.
Proudly so. I mean, I also have an issue, I think, with this idea that when driverless cars come in, people will default to watching something. I actually think that's
Matt
not
Fett,
true.
You feel sick.
I'm not saying they'll default. I just think that assumption, we have owned the car for 70 years. And it's, that will be different. And I love that thing about how you get it imposed on you when we know that in both directions it's been an education. I think that will change. I mean, I think, you know, literally even 3 years ago, we would have thought driverless cars was an absurdist, futurist nonsense. It really isn't. There are going to be fleets of lorries going down our own motorways.
I don't agree with
it.
I'm not having it.
Well, you cannot have it, but technology always confounds us in that sense. Equally, to your point about human beings compounding our expectations, we may discover that actually people don't want to watch. They actually do still like to listen.
I think, well, considering the kind of stats that are coming out of America about people who listen to podcasts, I do think we might be surprised.
But so much American radio isn't very good, which is why they listen to podcasts. We have fabulous radio in this country. I mean, Radio 2, the biggest radio station in Europe, 15 million listeners a week. You know, devoted. An audience, a C2D audience, as they say, which the BBC doesn't find very hard to get to. Those people are not listening to podcasts. They're listening to live radio. Most radio listening in this country is live.
So they'll carry on listening to radio in their cars.
Well, they might. I hope so.
That's the idea, right?
I mean, I think the UK-US thing's interesting, and I think it's the same for Europe. You know, strong public service broadcasters like the BBC keeps commercial radio much more honest than it does in lots of markets. In America, the things that have been successful, subscription radio. So if you basically say that commercial pop radio in America has a lot of ads and isn't very good, so 7 million people have subscribed to XM Sirius, and then Pandora, an on-demand service on mobiles, has been successful because radio has done a bad job. Whereas for here, I think that's partly because of digital radio, the station growth has been significant. So a six music listener here in the UK is pretty well catered for a great service. In America, that never happened. So, of course, they went off to Pandora or Sirius XM.
Or indeed Six Music.
What other big what other big technological changes then do we see coming down the line? We didn't, you know, driverless cars seemed like a joke 3 years ago. What do you think could be the thing we're saying in 3 years' time we were all surprised by?
I think that's such a hard question. I'll tell you what I find interesting, because I was thinking about it as, you know, we were coming in. If you think about pirate radio, which, you know, I do, and I kind of mourn it a bit. There's an aspect to old radio that I enjoyed, and that aspect was just twiddling a dial, and you'd come across pirate radio stations, or you'd come across all sorts of things, and that is changing and has changed and has to change. And I wonder sometimes about those aspects, you know, that there was... You know, there's an illegality to pirate radio that was actually really exciting, and that was the point of it. And the same to do with discovering that's changed. And because everything is quite safe now and legitimised, I wonder about the kind of slightly more offbeat things, how that's going to come through, how those things will manifest themselves, really.
Well, I feel like that's where sort of like, without trying to big ourselves up, like stations like NTS come into place, where, you know, again, just going back to the fact that
I am here in a Resonance FM t-shirt as well. I must point out, thank you. Yes,
but like, you know, like we cater to sort of listeners all over the world. We cater to listeners with so many different tastes, and you know we're able to sort of do the offbeat stuff as well as do the sort of commercial pop stuff as well at the same time, because, you know, we have that freedom to be able to do that. We don't necessarily have the sort of commercial restraints that, you know, that would, you know, would affect a sort of big commercial broadcaster, because they know they have to play certain playlisted tracks because they know that's what people will listen to. And that's what we've been doing just going back to the US as well, you know, it's, you know, we're in the process of setting up a studio in LA. You know, Los Angeles doesn't have a radio station like NTS. You know, they have K-Day, they have the sort of, you know, that plays hip-hop 24/7. They have KCRW, which is more of a college radio. What America is really strong at is college radio. Mm-hmm. Their college radio, and which is kind of what inspired the station as well at the same time, because, again, the college radio thing doesn't really have that sort of restraint that the commercial radios have. It isn't owned by Clear Channel or all these other things, so they can sort of do what we want. And so, you know, I feel, going ahead, stations like NTS or a lot more sort of online radio platforms offer that opportunity to sort of like be able to sort of have that weird and random stuff, as well as sort of cater to the people who want to listen to something, you know. And there's a way, you know, both worlds meet together and they discover new things as well about, you know, each other's music.
I'm just amazed that no massive tech companies have come along and tried to buy you, or have they?
We've had a few people approach us. We've had a few people approach us. Not really tech companies as such, more major labels, which is really interesting.
Okay.
So, but not really. But, you know, it's, you know, we have, there's a plan with NTS, so there's no rush for anything like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very long term, aren't you?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is why you'll survive.
I think one thing when you talk about technology, it's also making radio more discoverable. So, you know, voice activated things seem very hot at the moment, be it Siri or the Amazon Echo or devices like that. You know, how do we as the radio industry, and be that old-fashioned stations or new stations like NTS, how do we put ourselves in a place where we can benefit from that? So in the UK, the industry, BBC and commercial radio, works together on Radio Player, a nice app, and it powers all of our pop-up players. So they're on Amazon Echo. So in their office, they have worked out how to phoneticize all of our station names, have recorded it all in. They've done old versions of station names and things like that, so that when someone goes, Alexa, play me Radio 2 on Radio Player, it will just work. And when they say, hey, play me Chris Moyles, it will know it's on Radio X and those sorts of things. I think we've got to work harder to make sure we can be discoverable, because in the past, we were lucky with where we were.
Which is an excellent point when we talk about the archive, really. I mean, that's what, you know, this idea that the British Library will hit record at some point next year and start to record across all these channels. What should go into the archive? What has value? Is what is popular, is that what has value? Is it niche? I mean, who decides? It's a tough job for the British Library, but I'm going to just throw that out to you guys. Helen, you go first.
Well, I mean, I think the British Library needs to work out what it's using the archive for before it can answer those questions. And the most popular isn't necessarily where you start, although the most popular does tell you something about musical taste or taste in other ways at that particular moment. The thing I would be most worried about is that we become obsessed with niche and technological change and ignore these huge stations delivering fantastic radio, Radio 2 and commercial KISS, that millions of people in this country love every single day. There's a sort of ordinary person thing that matters, because in a way radio has always reflected the world that we live in at that moment. So when we had those cheesy DJs, that was what life was like for a certain point. It's very interesting to me that I think both Radio 3 and Radio 4, which are going great guns at the moment, have moved modestly and without shouting about it upmarket in terms of the intellectual fibre of what they do. They haven't got rid of the great pleasures. That's what they're doing. And that's working, because there's an audience that actually is intensely curious and wants more. So you might want to reflect that. Equally, if you want to understand what the real conversation is in the UK, you need to go to your commercial and BBC local radio phone-ins.
And also, don't you think it's like, are you looking to the future, or are you registering something that might be dying? So, I mean, if you think about, you know, I recently wrote an article about late night phone-ins, and I do worry a little that those things are going to die. So in which case, do you kind of like make sure you've got those because they might go away? Or do you look to the future and think we must have Beats One on there because, you know, that's around? Because it doesn't, but to me that doesn't seem like proper radio. So it's a bit like whatever you're doing, you're always skewed by what is your attitude towards it. So is your attitude towards, like, this is happening now and we need to record it, is it we're looking to the future, or is it we're looking to the past, or are we just doing, why don't you just do it across the day? Or are you looking at things like Resonance or NTS that are actually becoming their own brands anyway? Or are there? It's very hard to work out what you want
also
to do.
There's a bit about non-UK or consumption of non-UK stuff. So you look at the top 100 podcast chart, and Marc Maron will appear in there, or the podcast from the S Word. I'll try and not always give that as the example. Yeah. And actually, if a big number of UK listeners consume it, that I think that has value.
Yep.
Also, I mean, LBC...
LBC going great at the moment,
isn't
it?
LBC London's premier, you know, talk commercial station.
Absolutely, yeah. And over the years has kind of gone up and down in different ways. Is doing incredibly well at the moment. I'm not a big LBC listener, but I did listen to it over the Brexit time because I was just interested in what they were saying and what listeners and how they were responding. You know, it's a great bit of social commentary on
but
views.
That's sort of the point, isn't it? Does the British Library want this to tell us about who we are at this moment and who we are in a very multi-layered way, not just London, not just ethnicity,
gender? It's in 30 years' time, looking back at a moment in time from all aspects, the music, the social context.
So what are the big stories that we cover?
It's a research tool.
I don't just mean news stories, I mean the emotional stories. Immigration is clearly one, and that was the thing that was so powerful during the Brexit debate. But equally, you know, if you listen to a lot of BBC local radio, an older demographic, and I did a couple of summers ago, the huge amount of emphasis on cost of living. There's massive amount of stuff around being charged for your car parking in hospitals. I mean, hospitals aren't actually making a profit from this, but you would have thought they were. It really angered people. So there were lots of ways of understanding this country through
that
local radio stuff.
That's interesting, because actually what you're saying then is it about the content or is it about the medium?
Precisely.
Because that's what we don't really know what they want to record.
I completely agree with that.
Femi? Have your say.
I mean, I'm just kind of agree with what you're saying. It's like, what exactly are they trying to sort of, what do they really want from these archives? I guess from my perspective, I guess the shift from FM to sort of digital or internet is an interesting thing to watch. Using mobile to listen, the medium you're using to listen to radio is, I think, could be an interesting thing to look back on. Because like you said, you know, what's the new technological thing that's going to happen in the next 10, 20 years? You know, this is a way of sort of looking at what's happening now and it's going on from there. It's a tricky one. I actually don't really know.
There's a lot of it.
We're all baffled.
But also, because it's funny, isn't it? Because I always thought of the British Library as having copies of everything everywhere. That's the point of the British Library. It doesn't matter if it's a porn mag or it's some, you know, kind of Proust. It's going to be there. Don't worry about it. But that's fine in ye olden days.
Yeah.
But it's really hard now because there is so much stuff. So the editing process is really difficult. I mean, if I were them almost, I would just say, okay, I'm going to do one day and I'm going to do everything on one day, like absolutely everything. But then what if it's a Monday and your show is on a Wednesday? It would be really bad.
Lost to the world.
It is genuinely a conundrum. I'm glad it's them and not us.
Yeah. What particular things? Come on then, each of you put something into the radio archive. Helen, you start.
I'm stumped.
Deep in thought.
Yeah. Oh, I suppose I'd do the Today programme after Brexit.
Matt?
I'd put Ricky, Melvin and Charlie from the Kiss Breakfast Show in. You know, it's targeted at a certain group of people. It's trying to reflect young people's lives, you know, on that day. What are they talking about? What was of interest? What bubbled up to the top? So I'd put those three in.
Miranda?
I'd put certain stations in, including Resonance and NTS, but I would actually put Prison Radio in because I'm desperate to listen to it and I'm not allowed.
There is a way. There is a way.
I'm going to write a feature about it. That's how I'm getting in. But, you know, genuinely, Brixton Prison's around the corner from me. I can't hear any of it.
Can't you lurk outside with it? Like some sort of transmission?
Yeah, because I'm not allowed. So I want something like, you know, the stuff I can't hear is what I want in there so I can research afterwards.
Lovely. Come on, Femi, what are you going to put in?
To me. Okay, it's something that we did a few years ago, which was like, place an ambient mic next to an erupting volcano and broadcast that. Cool. That was really amazing. It was in Stromboli in Italy somewhere.
It's really interesting because we've moved from great events, you know, big, massive, significant events like the vote on Brexit, to tiny but incredibly interesting worlds like the prison. And that's what radio can do in a way that I don't think anything else can, in a kind of compelling, sorry to use the over-clichéd word, intimate way. And that is going to be the real challenge for the British Library, because they will want to capture all of that in a sense. Good luck.
Good luck to them. I think that's a wonderful point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about the future of radio. Well tackled. Thank you.
Ruth Barnes. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to this special edition brought to you by the Media Podcast and the British Library. You can get all of the shows we publish to download automatically for free on your phone or your laptop just by subscribing, of course, through your podcast app of choice. There are links to the most popular ones like iTunes or Pocket Casts at themediapodcast.com/listen. Thanks also to our sponsors, Media Masters. Listen to that at mediamasters.fm. And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at The Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.